so you know, reconvene the hearing. Just before we go to you, Mr. Sproul, I said a question. Oh, I thought, oh yes, Ms. Leith, I have a question for you. It's something that came up looking at chapter 27 last week. In your recommendations on the large lot residential, and you've recommended the 2,000 square metre minimum site size be extended, did you consider the relevance of Section 2774 has notified, which provided objectives and policies specifically for the area in Meadowstone that was provided for as 2,000 square metres minimum, as notified? And if not, could you in the reply consider whether those remain relevant given your recommendations?
Yeah, that's fine. I recall looking them, but I don't recall looking them in that context. So, yes, I can.
Yes, that's what I understood them to be, is to be the objectives and policies to have the 2,000 square metres, because it applies in the only place where notified it was.
Yes. But,
so if you could look at that, please, it would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Gordon Sproul. I'm representing the Panorama Trust, which is my family trust, and I've submitted 64. The Panorama Trust owns a property at 33 Panorama Terrace, and sitting beside me is Sue Wilson, who submitted 58. Sue owns a property at 1 Ernsmore Terrace. Both of our properties overlook the Lot 5 Panorama site you previously discussed earlier. And myself and two other submitters, submitter 184, Amy B. Campbell, and submitter 846, Philip Breton and Jean Foster, who have also put in submissions opposing the increased height on that site. The Campbells, Philip Breton and ourselves were interested parties in the Environment Court hearings a couple of years ago. Our objections really are around two things. One is the increased height on the site. We're doing this basically, I should say, as ratepayers who are not very sophisticated in planning matters, but I'm sure the commissioners will see through that and treat our submission the same as everyone else. But our objection is the height increase on that on Lot 5, on the Panorama site. Mainly because we were involved in the court hearings. Now, I did try and table in February additional documentation, which was the actual court ruling, but I was told by the council to bring along here today in an email, which I've got here, and I'll share it with you at the end of this. That site, originally the previous developers wanted to go to 14 metres on the site, and then they put a plan in for, I think it was 10 metres, and the council requested they put up height poles with those markings and a 7 metre one on, and then they came around and they investigated. They went to my place, I don't know who else they went to. They went to the site and they quickly realised that it was inappropriate for that particular site to go that high. Their reasons, and it was the developers and the council fighting the developers in the environment proceeding, the Environment Court proceedings. But it was not in keeping with the aesthetic appeal of Queenstown, and not in keeping with essentially a residential neighbourhood, as the roofline would far exceed existing buildings. The visual effect of the buildings would stand out on the entrance to Queenstown. The shading of houses on the other side of Frankton Road was a problem. The shading of Frankton Road itself was a problem because of ice in the winter, increased traffic volumes entering Frankton Road, impact of views on neighbouring properties, and the impact on the apartments already on the Palermo site. Nothing really has changed since that time, in my view, apart from the traffic volumes have increased. And I don't know whether anyone's tried to go into town at peak times, but since the traffic lights have gone in downtown, the traffic can be banked up right up to the Palermo apartments in peak periods. Trying to get out of Panorama Terrace onto Suburb Street and then onto Frankton Road is nigh on impossible at peak times, and goodness only knows what it's going to be like over the Christmas holiday period. So we believe there is no justification for the increase in the High Line. The development is a sloping site, and the developers, when they applied to the court, were going to dig down deeper than what they've already done now. I think it was, from memory, it's about 1.5 metres, but it may be more. By digging down, they were able to achieve, I think it's a 4-storey building, and stay within the 7-metre height line, apart from two areas. One was a glass balustrade, which is about 200 mils over, and the other one was the lift wells, which were about 0.5 metre over. They were tucked back more towards the hill, so most of us thought that was a reasonable, and we agreed and signed up to the currently approved consent on that site. However, we cannot guarantee that that hotel will be built according to that. It's a brownfield site, anything could be built on it, and we believe that that if anything went over the 7-metre height line, it would just add to and reinforce that the reasons why it was declined in the first place are still valid. The other area that we object to or oppose is the council granting itself discretionary not to notify parties, paragraph 9.6.3. So the council could, if it chose to, on a proposal, just automatically approve it to the 10 metres according to the current plan. But even though they've got to take in the adverse effects on persons who have not given their written approval, it's a council decision on who the party should actually go and get approval from. So it's possible that something could be built to 10 metres and we don't even know about it, even though we've gone through this whole process for the last 8 years on the site. So we oppose the council having that discretion specifically on this site, because we believe that with all that's gone on before, we should be clearly notified of any plans that change from the current consents that we have actually agreed to. We also think that the increased height lines on sloping sites along Frankton Road are probably unnecessary, because on most sloping sites it's very possible to dig out and achieve the council objectives of putting an extra story on most of these buildings, as is proved by the Lot 5 consent that already exists. So we have a concern about the Mount Crystal submission, submitter 150, where they're asking to go to get redesignated on their site and also go to up to 14 metres if approved by the council, because increased volumes of traffic, increased amenity values around that area would be the same. And if Mount Crystal gets approval, then I suspect you're going to be a flood of others that will come along to do that. Now, I don't know what the process is here. As I say, I'm not a planner. But Mount Crystal got approval to put their submissions into Workstream 7. Now, I'm a bit confused in reading some of the minutes and that have come out as to whether that's in relation to height or in relation to designation from low density to medium or high density. But clarification would be good, because I would suspect if it's about height again, we would like to perhaps have a say at that time as well.
I'll just clarify that. The
Their submission was in two parts, and one part was that the zoning be changed, and that part was shifted to the mapping hearings,
yep,
which will be next year sometime. And the other part related to the height limit in the zone.
Okay.
That part will be heard, and I think they're going to be heard on
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes.
Yes, that's good. Okay. All right, well, if it's the height zone is in work stream 6, then we don't need to be representing in work stream 7. But we think along Franklin Road, the derivatives of traffic that are increasing all the time in infrastructure is only going to become an increased problem if height zones are going to be raised along Franklin Road altogether. But our main submission is about Lot 5, Panamu development. So that's, if I just hand these over to you, you won't want to read them now. I tried to submit them earlier, but the council, as I say, the council said not to. I thought you would want an opportunity to read them before this hearing, but, and I'm sorry that I had put submit a 68 on a regional email to the council, it should have been 64. But that shows you, it's not very clear on the back pages, unfortunately it doesn't print out, but it does show you that that by staying within the 7 metre height line on that site and digging down, there is quite a substantial building still being built on that. It's not a single or a two story building.
So, the 7 metres is a taken from the existing excavator?
No, it was a sloping site.
Taken off the existing slope?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
The original slope.
Right.
And as you heard earlier with the early submission this morning that I sat in on, no one disputed it was a sloping site. Okay, and my understanding was, although I haven't seen any evidence to it, but in the hearings and things, it was all referred to as a separate subdivision. But the apartments that have been built have been subdivided off. And in fact, if you do go up and have a look at the site, you'll see the top end of the apartment range that's built there, which we both overlook, is actually three stories. But they dug down to get the three stories. And the same can apply. I mean, as I say, I think they were going to go another 1.5 metres from the existing ground level that's there now to give them the size of the building they want. Now, the hotel was going to be 125 rooms from memory, so it's not going to be a small building. The other thing that the developers agreed on that they were going to put a planted roof over the top of the hotel because the effect of all the neighbours on Panorama Terrace and Earn Floor Terrace is that you dislocate the roof lines. And it's pretty bad now, but it would get worse if that site got filled in at the same level.
Any good questions?
Thanks for providing us with this. Sometimes a court will issue a number of decisions, interim decisions, final decisions, etc. Do you know if this was the only decision that was made by the court?
That's the only decision that was made by the court. Basically, we used mediation.
Yep.
The developers decided it was easier to go to 7 metres,
yep,
put in new sets of plans, put it to the court. We had a meeting, a couple of mediation meetings with the court and the council, and that was the outcome.
Yeah.
And there were conditions that we imposed on it, like the height of trees. Traffic cannot use the top end of Panorama Terrace as an exit entrance. Buses couldn't start before, I think it was 7 o'clock, I'd have to read it again now, but they're all in there.
The previous submitter, through its lawyer, talked about the extensions to that consent that had been granted and expressed the view that it was likely that something like one of them approved was going to be built. Is that still your understanding of what's likely, or do you think something totally different might happen?
That was the first time I've heard that. I knew they'd got one extension, I didn't know they got two.
Right.
But I don't think any of us in this room take it for granted that they will build that. And it's a green site. they could end up putting, you know, different apartment blocks on it or whatever. And in fact, the original plan was after the hotel was built, they were going to build some apartments in the back of the hotel. That was another added addition to it. Now, I don't know whether that was on separate land or whether it was part of the hotel land. I couldn't answer that question.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Spool.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Hi, my name is Julie Nickman. I work for the International Consultants in Canberra. I'm here representing the Southern District Health Board. I write the original submission for the SDHB, and I'm joined by Mr. Warren Taylor, who's the Southern DHB Facilities and Site Development Manager. So the idea is we'll just summarise what we've put together for our evidence.
Yes.
For Warren to kickstart it, because he's got the background to the site and the future plans, etc.
Thanks, Jim. My name's Warren Taylor. I've been employed at the Southern District Health Board now for over 20 years in various building property roles. Currently employed as a facility and site development manager. In my role, I manage the ongoing operational aspects of all facilities owned by Southern District Health Board, which includes the Lakes District Hospital site. Also oversee and manage all capital, annual capital construction developments as required, and also a member of the newly formed Lakes Action Group, which has been established to manage and coordinate redevelopments within the hospital to meet the needs of the community moving forward. The Lakes District Hospital sites were established on the current site since 1988, located in Frankton near the southern end of the airport. Lakes District Hospital is the only hospital service in Queenstown Lakes District Council area. The site and buildings are considered to be a critical infrastructure for Queenstown. Southern DHB considers that the proposed zoning does not recognise the critical importance of the Lakes District Hospital Board and its services to the community. The proposed plan is notified, will require Southern DHB to gain resource consent for all developments on the site with the associated costs of doing so. The cost of these applications will come out of the same fund they use to deliver hospital and health services to a local community. Southern District Board considers that money will be better spent on delivering these health services and upgrading the facilities rather than potential unnecessary resource consent applications. The health needs obviously changed, and the hospital facilities must also change to meet the requirements of the community. Over the past number of years, we have been very little redevelopment for the Lakes District Hospital, which is consistent with the number of consents that's actually been submitted by the Southern District Health Board. However, over the past 2 years, there's been a significant increase in activity in discussion and focus on the health needs of the community and the work that's actually required on facilities to meet these needs. This increased activity is really focused on infrastructure. We've been obviously upgrading the placement of the site's heating system, fire protection systems, musical systems, upgrading the electrical components on the site. Now, all this here has been sort of stuff that's been happening in the background on the infrastructure, pending decisions around the actual models of care and what the actual health needs need to be moving forward. Southern District Health Board has committed to developing the Lakes Hospital site in Queenstown as an emergency diagnostic transfer centre, as well as refurbishing significant area for the hospital to ensure it can meet community needs over the next 5 to 10 years. The Lakes Action Group has been established to manage and coordinate these redevelopments with the hospital facility to meet the needs of the community. This action group is made up of senior members of the Southern District Health Board, including our CEO, a commission representative, and community representatives as well. The Commissioner team has announced they will be a two-stage process, with the first stage focusing on addressing immediate needs for the hospital through a development of a diagnostic capacity. So they'll be looking at a new CT scanner and ultrasound services, reconfiguration of the emergency department to a modern stand to enable better patient flow, increase resource facilities on the site, and develop a specialised audiovisual suite to enable greater opportunity for telemedicine. So that's really, you know, be hugely beneficial. And there's been significant discussions over the past few years regarding the health service and any future major development of health facilities within the region still some time off. While suddenly it's been one of the major stakeholders work through the evaluate options for the future needs of the community. So the work really was sitting over the next 2 to 5 years, this urgent work which you need to physically get on the site. Now the site is quite constrained. Actually we're building on it, so there may be a potential we need to extend the envelope of the building. For example, for a new CT, we may need to extend it slightly, but we're not actually looking at, you know, major redevelopment happening on that site in the initial shoot term. That will be something that we consider down the actual track. At this early stage of the planning, the size, scale, and time frame of any future major redevelopment cannot be confirmed. However, experience from other New Zealand hospital redevelopments such as Greymouth, obviously Christchurch, and Mockbetter, of course, and discussions regarding the Dunedin Hospital record indicate a 7 to 10 year time frame. The Southern DHB recognises and accepts any future major redevelopment is likely to be subject to a resource consent process. Southern DHB help all the work with the council as a need for this becomes clearer. However, Southern DHB would like to see the proposed district plan provide for hospital recognising the importance of the site and infrastructure of the Queenstown community. In conclusion, the Southern DHB would like to see that any redevelopment work as required on the site to meet the health needs of the community is allowed for as permitted activity within the plan. The Southern DHB is committed to developing the Lakes District Hospital site in Queenstown, as highlighted in my evidence, has commenced with this activity. As taxpayers and community members, we need to do everything possible to ensure every health dollar is directed to poor health care rather than associated consent fees.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. We've had evidence provided by the council at the earlier hearings that the district can expect a population of around 55,000 within 15 years. Is the Lakes District Hospital site likely to be adequate to cater for that sort of population?
I don't believe we'll be able to answer that at this stage. I think it's very much recognised through the Ministry and through the Southern DHB and the Commissioners that it's high on the agenda, hence the actual formation of this action group. Very much looking at the urgent needs we've actually got there at the moment, but also acknowledging that anything we physically do now may impact on redevelopments in the future. So as we actually work through all the stakeholders, you know, that will become clear around what the actual size and looking at the actual population growth and all the demographics and what that's actually going to look at. So, you know, there is land issue obviously on that site, which is there available, but whether that's size enough or what the site may look like in the future, you know, we're unable to say until we've actually gone through and done that work.
Well, one of the reasons I'm asking is that where the hospital is in fact the site that it is on, is cut through by the air noise boundary of the airport. And is within the out of control boundary. We've had a lot of evidence, and we're getting more in this set of hearings from the airport company about how we should not be allowing too much development within those areas. And so I'm wondering if the District Health Board has considered whether in the long term that is the appropriate location for an expanded hospital. I mean, we're looking at a district plan which really, in reality, will have a life of 20 years. So what we do now, even though it may be reviewed in 10 years after it becomes operative, that we have to think that far ahead.
It's very much been considered. It's very much that discussion has occurred whether that site's large enough for a hospital facility, but as I said, until such time as actually go through those services and actually look at what that will mean. And I think the other point, really acknowledging that the development of that size, we believe would trigger resource consent when we go through the process accordingly. What we've got at the moment is with the actual plan as it's designated at the moment, any minor works that we physically do to the site now will trigger that resource consent process.
Okay. How did the hospital come to be located on that site? Were there any particularly significant characteristics about the location? I can understand the request to have the activities undertaken on the site provided for, but I'm not clear on whether or not the Health Board is also seeking any particularly different rules or consent triggers or consent requirements or assessment matters for any of the underlying rules that otherwise apply in the zone. So same height limit, same yard setback, same you name it. Have I got that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. Any questions? In the back of my mind, then Ian will always be able to tell you. I don't know if you've seen the map, but apparently when they drew it, some of the council just conveniently left the hospital right on the boundary. The line actually goes around the hospital, then goes to New Zealand. So.
Well, I think it's more subtle than that.
I think it's
a mistake. Yes.
Just the submissions from the beginning from the airport are saying, oh, no one's to do any further development. The Edwards boundary. But that is something we need to address.
Okay, so I did the submission. So my submission looked at the definition of community activity and community facility as well as the low density residential zone. And we talked about maybe getting rid of the definition of community facility. Unless an overlay or similar was included in the proposed plan, as there is now. The planner's report agrees with this. However, it took me aback when I realised that this whole community activity, community facility and so on could be potentially notified in the second phase of the proposed district plan. Because I use the word confusion, but it's probably more uncertainty in terms of how we actually approach what was best for the hospital, knowing that there could be the potential for a community facility overlay or whatever title it's going to come out, and whether there could be different options for the hospital as the plan process goes on. But look, we're in the low-density residential zone here at this point, so we basically sought to have it provided for within those zone provisions, and particularly just as Warren was saying, to actually recognise the importance of it and perhaps allow it to have permitted activity status subject to a range of performance standards. So it was a pretty general submission. It was just to recognise the importance of the hospital in the zone. And then just really the final point is, Mr. Taylor, he's commented on the fact that they are looking to continue developing this site, certainly in terms of the short and medium term. So it's got a feature in the district plan as a particular site that is going to provide for the community and just the whole part too, the social wellbeing and providing for health and safety for the community in the form of healthcare. So that's really what this submission was about, our evidence.
From a planning point of view, do you consider that the hospital would justify some specific set of provisions in the district plan, whether by zoning or some special overlay?
Absolutely. We've just gone through a similar process in Dunedin. where they've used the major facility zones, and they have actually broken out school zones and hospital of their own. Has Dunedin Hospital, as does Mercy Hospital, as does the university, and so on. And there is a set of provisions specific to the hospital. And I was, in terms of whether that's appropriate, yes.
From a planning point of view, would it be an outcome appropriate for the district? Something similar happened here through the stage two?
Well, I suppose that's where my uncertainty came. If, for example, the council were considering to look after community facilities as an overlay, and yes, I think that would be completely appropriate.
Well, I think, to be fair, I think the problem with community facilities is that it's a great bag of all sorts of things, and that's been the problem the council's had. And I'm talking about the hospital.
Sure.
As its own, there is only going to be one in the district, unless the health board gets a sudden rush of blood to the head and puts one at Wanaka as well, which I doubt.
Yeah, look, I recognise that when I did the submission, and quite honestly, when I saw the definition of community activity and community facility, went through my mind that it had been accidentally left from as an overhang from the operative plan, and that was where the submission came from. Get rid of facility. I think community activity, to my mind, is a better way of dealing with it. And that's where this whole the plans report went, oh, for goodness sake, they're going to think about dealing with community activities or facility, whatever that definition is around that group of activities. It could be something completely different again. And that threw me back, and I went, well, we're starting from the beginning again on how these activities should be looked after, or if the hospital could be potentially broken out, then the second part of the notification, if it's going to be part of that, then needs to be a great conversation with the Southern District Health Board and anybody else who's providing community activities to actually how they should be dealt with in the plan.
You heard my questions, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, I did.
Do you think that there would be some value in the health board and the council discussing these matters rather than trying to tailor something on the basis of the submission, so that something more practical and pragmatic could come in on stage two?
I think that would be ideal. I think that is the starting point. I'm sure that the submission stand is certainly general enough. I'm quite conscious of the fact it's very general enough that if we do need to fall back on the low density residential zone provisions, then there is enough latitude there for you to consider if a second stage isn't something that goes forward as you discuss. But yeah, I think there needs to be that whole conversation of where the hospital planning is going and whether what the council sees the best way to deal with it.
Thank you. So just in terms of the stage one matter that's before us and the submission, I can understand in the context of a residential subdivision of around about 600 or 700 square metre sites, things like site coverage and yards and setback controls, recession plans, working to define and isolate fairly regularly scaled buildings. But on a 7,000 square metre site, the same rules could lead to not necessarily taller buildings, but substantially greater scaled horizontal buildings. And so the question is, if one was attracted to the idea of a subzone, are there any particular provisions or controls to manage the effects of what will, I suspect, already are and probably will continue to be buildings much bigger than your typical attached house that the zone's otherwise provided for? Are we really sure that just the existing residential provisions are good enough?
If you're talking about its own provisions, and there's an overlay that says this is a hospital zone or something like that, stop me if I've misinterpreted.
And that's what I'm asking you.
Then I think there's a whole range of things that could be considered, because what we're looking at is a particular site. It's not, we're not asking for a hospital to be located in any random location in the low density residential zone. It's a particular site, and so you can take that configuration of that site and actually look at it and develop some provisions particular to it. Like, I understand that there's neighbours on one side, and their residential amenity is to look after, no doubt about it, because that's what the zone requires. But the site's probably big enough that maybe as you moved away from that, that you could actually start to think about its own particular rules. And as Warren said, if it's going to be a major redevelopment, then the Southern District Health Board aren't phased by the fact that a residential is not required.
Yeah, I think certainly the site-specific nature of the facility being quite far away from detached housing certainly speaks against the idea of giving it a zone that's intended to manage detached housing. Nothing further from me.
So just one question. What main hold does the district help have in Queenstown? What's your, like the bit across the road?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Current hospital where that turned into a formal car park for the airport?
Right? Yes, yep. Yeah, so that is obviously the site that is currently on there now, right up to the Southern Cross, or the St John's Ambulance.
St John's, yeah.
And then the land deck grid down the front, we're going right down through to the main highway going back through to Invercargill. So, okay. And on that side we have a mental health building, we have a doctor's accommodation building, and there's also a dental clinic that's been put on that building as well. But there is quite a large section there.
Substantial.
Yeah, which has just been subleased out to the airport, like temporary parking while they do some work on their site.
Thanks.
Are the health board plans progressed far enough that some form of structure plan could be included at this stage?
Not that I'm aware of for any major redevelopment. Mm-hmm. Definitely over the next 2 to 5 years. Yes, I believe there is a structure plan is identified work streams through from the commissioners who actually wanted to tackle. So they are underway now. We have just completed an RFP process for a project manager to be appointed to the site. So that's now just in the final evaluation. So we will be seeing that work coming on stream reasonably quickly.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is William Richards and I'm submitting number 55. I'm also talking on behalf of my wife, Deborah Richards, who was to follow me to talk today as submitter number 92. We're both concerned about the same issues. Firstly, I must apologise to the panel for missing our previous slot to submit on the 12th of October. No major excuse other than my incompetence in correctly noting the date on schedule. As it was, we were never going to be able to be in Monica on that day. I would have had to reschedule. Our submission relates to Sker Heights development in Wanaka, which is shown on Appendix A. The plan submitted proposes to change the zoning of this area from low to medium density. For clarification purposes, in this submission I will refer to the area in question as Sker Heights, although the developers have recently christened the development The Heights. My submission is in three parts. Firstly, to argue that given the sale of the land by the QLDC during the district plan revision process, the rezoning of the land from low to medium density is no longer appropriate. Secondly, if the zoning change is to be implemented, then controls need to be put in place to try and mitigate the impact of the development on the amenity provided by the scenic walkway, which runs along the ridge to the east of the site. And thirdly, to respond to some of the submissions made by Messrs. Williams and Goldsmith on behalf of the new owners of the site, Universal Developments, who has submitted number 177. By way of background, our primary concern is with regard to the preservation of the views from the scenic walkway, which borders the eastern edge of Sker Heights, as well as preserving the setting for the lake as provided in the scenic and rural roads variation to the current district plan. Whilst we acknowledge the developer's right to make a profit, this should not be at any cost, and we believe that the preservation of the visual amenity afforded by the current scenic walkway should be preserved as much as possible. The site is an undulating area, which generally rises to a ridgeline as one moves from west to east across the site. Along the top of the ridgeline, the council has established a scenic walkway, which takes one from town along the back of Sker Heights, across Orby Road and behind the new Kirimoka development to the Sticky Forest and beyond. The walkway is popular with both locals and tourists as a walking and bike route, and is used and enjoyed in appreciable numbers. In the hearing panel's decision with regard to the rezoning of the neighbouring Kirimoko block, Plan Change 13 of 2007, it was described as an essential component of the urban walkway network within Wanaka. The view from the end of Mataraki Place is arguably one of the best easily accessible views in Wanaka, with panoramic views of the township, the lake and the mountain backdrop. It is also one of the few places in Wanaka where one can get spectacular views of both the sunrise and the sunset. The council have established seating on the walkway to allow people to enjoy the view. As part of the consent for the earlier development of Stage 1 at Sker Heights to the south of the area in question and the Kirimoka block to the north, special consideration was given to the preservation of the landscape views from the walkway by limiting the height of the set, by limiting the height and the setbacks of the buildings which bordered it. It would therefore be inconsistent if the proposed plan change effectively blocked the landscape views for the best part of the walkway. The other aspect of the walkway is the setting which it provides for the lake. When considering the plan change which was required for the Kirimoko block, part 4.2 of the QLDC report quoted the scenic rural road variation of the district plan as follows. The hill and mountain slopes surrounding the lakes assume a greater importance because of their role in providing a setting for the lakes. Likewise, the views from many roads and public places within the district assume increased importance as they give visual access to the mountains, lakes and landscapes that in turn are integral to the economic well-being of the district and provide a sense of place to residents and visitors. The report went on to say, the ridgeline around the Kirimoko block is an example of a rural landscape providing a setting for a lake. It is important that this is not compromised further by additional development. It is acknowledged that there are already houses at the top of this prominent ridgeline on land adjacent to the subject site. However, it is considered that the existence of existing houses does not detract from the need to protect the ridgeline within the Kirimoka block from any further development. The Commission accepted the QLDC's evidence on this point. Given that the ridgeline behind the Kirimoka block is the same one which runs behind Sker Heights, the same issues apply. We would therefore submit that the same consideration should be given to the preservation of the framing which the ridgeline gives to the lake and the sense of place which it provides to residents and visitors. In a similar manner, the restriction of the height and setback of the eastern block of Sker Heights would provide a hard edge to the interface between the existing low-density developments at the top of the ridge and the proposed medium-density developments of the site. This would assist with the visual cohesion of the site when viewed from the lake and elsewhere in Wanaka. These points were considered relevant and important in the Kirimoka decision, and we would submit that a similar consideration needs to be given here. Should the land be rezoned at all? At the time of the proposed district plan was put forward and we and others made our original submissions, the land was owned by the council. As such, implementing any planning and development controls thought appropriate to mitigate the impact of the development was a rezoning from low to medium density would have been relatively straightforward.
Mr. Richards?
Yes.
The issue isn't whether it should be rezoned at all or not in this hearing. The issue is to do with the rules that would apply to the medium density zone. So if the zoning itself, if your submission covers that, will be dealt with middle of next year.
I can skip this section and yes. reapply to submit that if that's necessary. I mean, the issue, though, is that we didn't submit on the rezoning because at the time that the proposed district plan was put forward, the council owned the land, and the issues that I'm highlighting in this part of the submission were not relevant. The sale of the land halfway through and the submission that you've heard from the developer on these issues mean that they are trying to subvert this whole process, and so they're trying to say that you cannot implement any controls over them.
I have to say, as a resident of Wanaka, that it's been quite well known in the town since the moment the council decided to build the pool that it would be looking to sell that land.
If they had waited until the plan was implemented, then they could have controlled. We made a submission, the Section 42A report responded to that submission and put in controls. Having sold the land now, the current owners are saying no controls are possible.
The evidence that we heard from the current owners was that they were preparing the subdivision under the operative rules. So the proposed zoning is not strictly relevant to that extent, except that they will be doing some which don't comply. But in reality, most of the subdivisions in Wanaka have not complied with the zoning since about 1992. So I don't think they will be extraordinary in that sense.
Mr. Goldsmith's legal submission suggested that the council could not implement any zoning controls over them. That would be in excess of those that were appropriate to a low density zone. Mm-hmm. He is trying to say that we cannot implement any meaningful zoning control over this area. Nobody can implement any meaningful mitigation to the development.
In a legal sense, strictly, he's correct. Parliament, in its infinite wisdom, decided that the rules and proposed district plans have no effect until the council makes its decision. So the rules in the medium density zone will have no effect on that land until the council makes its decision on these hearings. And so that is unlikely to happen before about this time next year. So for the next 12 months,
they
can't do what they like. They have to comply with the operative plan rules. So that, which is, as I understand it, what they're proposing.
It's not appropriate for me to talk about this. As I say, I think the way that the QLDC's premature sale of the land has subverted this whole process. But if it's more appropriate for me to talk about that at another or a different hearing,
from the matters that are before us, if you go on to section 3.
Okay. If the rezoning is to proceed, then it is important that the council can mitigate the impact on the view to and from the walkway as much as possible.
Page 7.
I'm on page 6, I'm sorry.
I said section 3. You've got two section 3s.
I've messed it up.
My one says section 3, universal zeppelins.
Do you not have a page 6?
Yes, but that's got section 2 on it.
That's section 2 is where I'm starting. Is that okay?
Yes, Jeremy. Yeah.
If the rezoning is to proceed, then it is important that the council can mitigate the impact on the views to and from the walkway as much as possible. By exercising a robust measure of control. The Council in their report in paragraphs 10118 and 10119 have proposed a single-storey height limit and increased 6 metre setback from the walkway for the relevant plots. Universal Developments in their submissions have proposed and accepting a 4.5 metre setback. We would support the Council's proposal for a single-storey height limit but have believed that the 6-metre setback proposed by the council should be increased to 10 metres. This would be consistent with the setback and no build zone approved during the plan change for the neighbouring Kiriloko block, and provide for a visual continuity not only from which to enjoy the views of the lake and mountains, but also provide a frame for the town along the continuous ridgeline when viewed from the lake and elsewhere in Wanaka. Given the undulating nature of the site, we would further propose that a further height restriction should be put in place where, due to the topography of the land, the 7-metre height limit allowed for in the medium density zone under the proposed plan would unduly impact the uninterrupted view of the lake from the walkway. Turning now to the evidence provided by Mr. Goldsmith and Mr. Williams on behalf of the current developers of the site, Universal Developments Limited. They are concerned with three main areas of the QLDC planner's report. Proposed minimum setback of 6 metres on the eastern boundary of the skirt heights. Proposed maximum building height of 5.5 metres per building with a boundary to the walkway. The proposed 400 square metre minimum site density when combined with 400 square metre maximum lot size or lot area. As mentioned, Mr. Goldsmith challenges the council's ability to implement planning restrictions having sold the land to Universal free of any specific site restrictions. He also pointed out some potential anomalies where people have purchased and developed building plans prior to any zoning change becoming operative. Given the current low density zoning of the area and prior to any rezoning to medium density, he advises that Universal will seek consent for some smaller plot sizes in the meantime. Mr. Williams argues that neither one-storey height restriction nor the additional setback to protect the views from and to the scenic walkway proposed by QLDC are justified. He firstly states that the primary purpose of the walkway appears to be to provide, and I quote, pedestrian connectivity. I would suggest that Mr. Williams is either being disingenuous or he has little familiarity with the walkway and the reserve on which it sits. The place is described as a scenic walkway for a reason, and if the QLDC only wanted to provide a pedestrian connectivity between the site, one side of town and the other, there would have been other, less expensive ways of doing it, not least of which is the pavement which runs down Anderson Road parallel to the walkway. Mr. Williams then argues that under the current low-density rules, there is little difference between the bulk and location controls, which his client could use to put up a structure, and those available under the medium-density proposals. He states that the key differences are a slight increase in permitted building coverage from 40% to 45%, and a slight reduction in the building setbacks from 2 to 1.5 metres. He therefore concludes that the built form controls will not result in a form of development enabled under the MDR provisions that is visually more imposing on the walkway. Lastly, he complains that he's having difficulty in designing an efficient block layout on the steeper parts of the site, being those close to the walkway, when restricted by the 400 square metre maximum lot size. Whilst he acknowledges that this could be got around by applying for non-complying activity resource consents, he appears to suggest he could be given a virtual carte blanche to design the plot sizes as he sees fit. I have a number of issues with these opinions. Universal Developments purchased the land in June 2016 and clearly were conscious of the proposed change to the zoning of the area. At the time of their purchase, they would have had access to the submissions which would have been made with regard to the area, and specifically those which sought to encourage the council to implement planning controls in terms of setbacks and building height restrictions to preserve the views from the scenic walkway. During their due diligence, they should therefore have appreciated that there was a development risk that the council would act on these submissions. It is not therefore appropriate for them to now call foul and question the council's legal right to implement appropriate controls. Whilst Mr. Williams is correct that the QLDC recommendations would impose restrictions in excess of those which are currently in place under the current operative zoning, he ignores the fact that the zoning does not necessarily need to change, but possibly need to. If he proceeds, his client is getting the benefit of a plan change for free. With a consideration of the change from low to medium density occurring as part of the district plan review, it is largely going below the radar of most of the residents of the area and Wanaka in general. Most people did not wade through the complete district plan proposals to find this out. In the last few weeks, we have had a number of people express their dismay at the developments and the impact it will have. I think it's fair to say that if the plan change was being proposed as a private plan change by the developer, it would have attracted far more attention and scrutiny, not only from the surrounding residents, but from the council. This is based on the large volume of information, submissions and reports which are involved in the plan change, which brought about the neighbouring Kiriloko development. If the plan change proceeds, whilst the restrictions which we propose may appear to be harsh, we would also point out that it is always open to the developer or future owners of the property to apply for a resource consent in order to breach some of the rules. Indeed, Universal have indicated a willingness to do so. These can relate to building height setback or any other aspect of the rules. The impact of a breach can be considered on a case-by-case basis, and if the impact is less than minor, the consent granted. One has to start from a more restrictive position to have this control. It should be noted that, with the walkway being the eastern boundary of the site, any resource consent to exceed whatever rules are in place would not need to be notified to any property owners from across the walkway, thus depriving the public and residents of Mataraki Place the opportunity to comment on any loss of amenity. The RMA is predicated on the need to mitigate the effects of excess development, and it habitually leads to a number of compromises. This is one such compromise. It is therefore totally appropriate, if the plan change proceeds, that the QLDC seek to impose these restrictions, whilst freeing up the remainder of the land for more intense development than is currently permitted. Mr. William argues that a 25% reduction in building setbacks from 2.5 to 1.5 metres is not significant. I believe that this is flawed. As can be seen from Appendix B, Photo 1, on small, in this case 500 square metre plots, such as proposed under the MDR, people will build out to the edges of what is permissible. On LDR plots, whilst people may have the right to build out to the limits, they rarely do, and development, as per Photo 2, is more common. These plots are around 800 square metres. The result is a significant reduction in the gaps through which to view the scenery from the walkway. Similarly, the impact of the increase of the building coverage from 40 to 45% should not be understated. The increased density of housing, when combined with the reduced setbacks and smaller plot sizes, provides far less gaps, creates a more imposing built environment, which would obstruct the view. The practical result of the council's 400 square metre maximum lot size and 400 square metre minimum site density is that the owner of an 800 square metre lot, such as those currently being marketed by Universal Developments along the walkway, will have to develop two residential units on his land. This will likely be by means of a duplex house across the whole width of the site. Without the single-storey limit, these will be a formidable barrier. However, if the council were to concede this point to Universal, the only practical implication is the buildings on the plots would be larger, 45% coverage, and closer together than their low-density equivalents. They would, however, be just as expensive, if not more so, than their low-density equivalents. The stated aim of medium-density housing to provide a supply of low-cost housing would be lost. This further supports the argument about the plan change. In conclusion, and I'll miss out number one. Number two, if the zoning change proceeds, then whilst I support the QLDC's recommendation for an increased setback and height restriction on the lots closest to the scenic walkway, I feel that a 10-metre setback would be better. This would provide consistency with the no-build zone, which is provided in the neighbouring Kirimoko block. I would go further and submit that the panel should consider further height restrictions for properties within the development, which, due to the undulating topography of the site, could significantly impinge upon a landscape, and particularly the views of the walkway. As an indication of the impact of a 7-metre building on the views, I've attached a panoramic photo taken from across the walkway. The poles are 7 metres long and situated 2 metres from the boundary, but give an indication of the imposing impact of a 7-metre building on the view. These were done by Patterson Pitt a few years ago, so that should be reasonably accurate. Thank you.
Your last page, the photo is with the height pole.
Yeah.
Would you be able to maybe take the version of your evidence that's been held up here and just mark for us on the plan of the walkway
where that's from?
Where that's from would be really helpful for us.
It's actually
the
three lots that are for sale on there.
It's behind three lots that are for sale.
Those three there?
All the way along, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you on the other side of the walkway, so the Mataraki Place side of the walkway, can I point them out?
Yes.
Can I point it out to you?
Here we go, there's a bright green highlighter I can't understand.
It's basically taken from about here.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
You were asking which ones they cover.
Yeah.
Oh, it was more just understanding where the photos were taken from.
Yeah.
Thanks. So you talked about the recommended setback from the walkway boundary maybe being extended to 10 metres was your preference.
That was our original submission.
Was that to make the walkway feel more open and spacious, or was it to do with, as the slope drops, the further they go away, the lower they get?
The further they go away, the lower they get.
Okay, look, thanks. I understand what you've been submitting on. It's really clear.
And when we first spoke to the council when the district plan was first mooted, we had informal discussions about they were saying that if the developer the land was developed, then that top area might be a park or a playground or something, so people would continue to enjoy it. As I said earlier, the council had sold the land, so they lost the control to do anything with it.
Actually, I'll ask you another question. We walked part of it, and what struck me was how undulating it is, ups and downs and ups and downs. And given that experience, and do you see the preservation of the view about maintaining something of that constant view continuously as you walk along the walkway, or do you envisage it could be lost in places but preserved in other places, a kind of revealing and hidden as you walk along the walkway?
I think it would be better to keep it open. I mean, that's why, it's so beautiful, and it's so, there's nowhere else in Wellington.
So that's about looking over the top of buildings, isn't it, rather than looking between them?
Yeah.
That's what it brings to, yeah. Okay, look, thanks for it.
And that's what happened in Stage 1 of Skylight, and that's what's happening in Kiramoka, which sandwich the area that's in question.
So.
Yep. I'm just trying to get orientated. You go down from what you're showing on the map here. You go around me, you go downhill from what we've got on the map here.
Yeah.
And behind the Kiramoka. And then you continue on above Peninsula Bay, right through.
If you look at the view that I gave you of the lake, Kiramoka Block is to your right.
Right, yep.
Across Albury Road. And then you've got the Sticky Forest and the Peninsula Bay, or it goes all the way along there.
And some of that's already been developed. Track all the way?
There's track all the way, certainly through the other side of Sticky Forest, and the track keeps on getting extended periodically.
Thank you.
Just on that. Last point, your last comment, Commissioner Munro, and you talked about Stage 1 of Skua Heights. And then are you referring to the sites off Bovet Place?
Yes, it's the ones to the left, yeah.
When I walked up there, there's a house, and what looks like a house and a residential flat, on one side, and the next side there's a new house just being built.
Is that the one near the trees?
Well, no, the first two sites that you come across walking south.
The one with the massive retaining wall, is that the one you're talking about?
Are you talking on the...
I'm talking about off Bovet Place.
I don't know about Bovet Place.
It's the new... Skua Heights 5, I think that's what it's originally called. So it's...
On this plan that you provided,
yeah, down there,
those two sites there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're about a 5.5 metre height limit.
Well, some people, I'm not amongst them because I'm rather tall, but some people can't see over either of those buildings, notwithstanding the 5.5 metre height limit.
When I was the person who spoke to the planners about when we were talking about some mitigation on putting the playgrounds in, and he pointed out to me, he said that he thought that there had been restrictions on the setback and the height for that first part of the development.
Okay. Thank you. Just for future reference, Mr. Richards, if you're going to present that much evidence, our procedural moment required it to be lodged in advance so that we could preview it.
Okay.
And so for this sort of time, it should have been limited to about 3 pages.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay.
Thank you.
I'll adjourn the hearing until 10:50.